your perfect date.
It's a tough one. I'd have to say April 25th, because it's not too hot, not too cold. All you need is a light jacket.
And because it's the first round of the NFL draft. Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Draft coverage presented by Bud Light. It's the Arizona Sports NFL Draft Special.
And the first round is complete as we welcome you back here to Arizona Sports and our concluding coverage of the first round of the NFL Draft, though we're not entirely done yet because we are hopeful to have a conversation with Cardinals GM Monty Austin Fort on what many people are hailing as a very successful day in his second ever draft as the GM of the Cardinals. They are currently meeting, and I say they, he and Jonathan Gannon are currently meeting with the media right now at the Cardinals headquarters. But we believe we're going to have an opportunity to talk with Monty when they're done. So Dave Burns here, the Burns and Gambo Show. I am joined by Luke Lipinski and Ron Wolfley, our great duo in the middays from 10 until 2. And obviously there'll be a lot more reaction on the draft in your show tomorrow and a preview of round two. But let's first of all talk about what the Arizona Cardinals did today. And we cannot undersell it enough. The Cardinals have... It's a very successful day when you walk out of this thing with Marvin Harrison Jr., the all-everything wide receiver from Ohio State, and Darius Robinson, a violent dog of a defensive lineman out of Missouri. I would imagine, Ron, that you are very excited about what the Cardinals did today. I know that's an easy setup, but I'm sure you are.
No, I really am. You know, once again, I don't get too high on rookies for the most part. David, you know this. I've seen so many rookies that had problems playing, okay, regardless of where they were drafted. Some of them just never made that adjustment to the NFL from college. So I'm very leery of this. Now, Marvin Harrison Jr. to me is, I just don't see this guy ever having any issues making that transition from the college game to the pro game. And a lot of it has got to do with his dad. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing I do enjoy about this. I think his dad is a good influence on Marvin Harrison Jr. in regard to preparing him as well for the National Football League and how to make that mental adjustment from college to pro. So I don't worry too much about that. Once again, Darius Robinson, he's going to have to come in here and prove that he can be a dog at this level. Not just college, but at this level.
Luke? I keep thinking back to the very start of the season when all the mock drafts before this season had even started had the Cardinals picking first and second and coming out of it with Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., right? It was like, boy, how great would that be? Mm-hmm. Well, now you look at what they got. They have essentially Kyler Murray, Darius Robinson, and Marvin Harrison Jr., and it's something Wolf and I know have talked a lot about on our show, but just how important it was that Kyler Murray played some games this season so that you weren't the team reaching for J.J. McCarthy with the fourth pick in the draft. Because he played, to me, that means there's no hesitation you can take Marvin Harrison Jr. It doesn't mean Kyler's going to the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean he's going to be this quarterback of this team for the next 10 years, maybe, but you have a quarterback, and we saw how many teams basically panic tonight because they had to have a quarterback.
Yeah, well, we're six in the first 12 picks, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be, and we'll talk general NFL drafts here in a minute, but I think if we're going to do one general takeaway, that certainly would be one of them, the six quarterbacks taken in the top 12. Yeah, I think, look, this one, when we get Monty on, I'm going to take away from this night was the contrasting styles and approaches that we've had from this now GM in his second year of drafting.
Yeah.
Last year, it was, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. I'm going to be here, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to get this, I'm going to go that. I'm going to get these assets, and I'm still going to get the guy I want, and watch me just play three-dimensional chess while all of you are playing checkers. This year, I think we were all expecting something similar to that from Monty, where he was just going to be bouncing all around the board. He was going to use all this leverage and all this power they had. Nope. Sit back. I'm going to take the best non-quarterback available at number four. And no, I'm not going to get all panicky at 27 and move around. I like this defensive lineman. I'm going to take him. Maybe he's wagering that the corners will still be there with that first pick in the second round. But it was a very stylistically, a very different approach for Monty this year than it was last year. Wolf seemed very content to just stay put. And as the cliche goes, let the draft come to him.
David, that might be your most brilliant observation tonight. I mean, honestly, right now, just the fact that you had a general manager, and in one draft, he blew the NFL away. When you think of last year's draft, he really did. What he did, moving down and then moving back up, getting a guy like Paris Johnson Jr., collecting all this draft capital, everybody was praising Monty Austin for it, and rightfully so. That's a great observation. He came in here, and we're all thinking, you know what? He's going to do the same thing. Man, it makes a lot of sense that he's going to do the same thing, right? He's going to be given that opportunity, and that's exactly what he didn't do. I love that, man. That shows a little bit of restraint, a little bit of humility as well.
Well, just a willingness to adapt to your environment and not, you know, be sort of typecast as a this type of general manager or that type of general manager. Now,
yeah, but David, once again, I mean, to your point, you have to emphasize the fact that once you get praised for doing something like that, my goodness, you know, you want to do the same thing to show people you are the wheeling dealing general manager, and he did not
probably would
do
have been
it.
Easier this year. You would think
with all the inventory they had, and the key word there I think is humility. Is the humility to say I don't need to flex.
I don't need to do this.
I don't need to show anything off. I don't need to show you my powers here as a general manager. I'm just gonna. Marvin Harrison Jr. is an unbelievable game changing wide receiver. I'm not going to overthink this.
I love it.
I'm not going to overwork this.
And to your point on the being able to adjust, I'm sure when he made that trade with Houston last year, he wasn't expecting that first round pick to be the 27th pick in the draft, you know? Even if it wasn't going to be first, like people were saying, you're probably thinking top 10 pick there, and instead it's 27.
Look, everybody thought that. It was going to be a top 5 pick.
I got to think even Houston on some level was willing for it to be that when they made the trade because they knew that was at least possible.
Now, all that being said, I'm curious, and I don't know if we'll ever get the full Monty answer, but I am curious the level of temptation, not so much at 4. I don't know if there's a lot of temptation at 4. I'm curious about the temptation about 27 with the corners, and was there a moment where, you know, whether it's Graham Barton, whether it's Terrion Arnold, whether, I mean, literally two players that we thought would be perfect fits for the Cardinals, one of them went at 24, one of them went at 26, and the Cardinals made their pick at 27. Certainly, there was inventory for them to go get either one of those guys if they were convicted to do so, and they chose not to, and I wonder if there was any temptation for them to do
that. Well, you also, I mean, look at it. Cooper DeJean and Kool-Aid McKinstry right now, you figure either one of those guys would be a good fit for the Cardinals, you would think, right? Maybe they feel differently on one of them. That's two players. They're three picks away from their pick to start the second round. So if just one of, if anybody that isn't a corner goes in those first two picks, they can still get a pretty good corner.
Yeah, the other thing, too, I really enjoy about Darius Robinson and that pick, once again, at number 27, the dog that he is right now. But never forget, guys, that edge rusher, too, can put an awful lot of pressure on an opposing quarterback if he's good at his job. Now, Darius Robinson has got to show us he can be good at his job at this level, a whole new level, the National Football League, the best level our species can generate, right? He's got to prove that he's able to do that right there. But if, in fact, he can do that, guys, now he's going to make your corners a whole lot better, too.
Yeah.
Whatever corner you have, he's going to make them better. And hopefully, he'll be able to come in. There are a couple of positions where I think a rookie coming in can make an immediate impact, and the edge is one of them. Because you line them up and you say,
go get him.
Go get the quarterback.
That guy with the ball.
Yeah. You know, even if it's situationally, as opposed to run down situation, even if he's not a three down guy, you can line him up and say, hey, it's 3rd and 8, go get him.
I'm going to assume, and it doesn't mean I don't want to hear it, I'm going to assume I know the answer to Luke on this question, so I'm going to start with you, Wolf. Positionally speaking, is it corner tomorrow with that third pick of the second round? I mean, just in general.
Man, I mean, I'm thinking of Kool-Aid McKinstry actually being there at number 35 right now. Boy, that really gets me fired up because that's the corner I think he's got. He's got ability to be a really good corner in the National Football League. But now all of a sudden he's got a chip on his shoulder.
For not being
once
the first
again,
rounder.
For not being the first rounder. Not only that, Terrion Arnold, right? This is what he's always heard. It was Terrion Arnold, of course. Well, now all of a sudden maybe he's got that chip in his heart And if he does, that's only going to drive this competitor even more.
Luke, I don't want to assume corner.
I think it's got to be corner. I mean, the fact that it's such a need and that position is kind of untapped so far in this draft because it, in a weird way, and it is such a premium position, was almost like the overlooked position because you had the first 14 picks all being offensive players. You had the desperate run at quarterbacks. You had so many good receivers and so many good offensive linemen. I just think that's probably positionally the greatest value out there right now, and it's something you really need.
Again, not that it's the end-all be-all, because it most certainly is not. It's just kind of what I've been using as a guide in general. Cooper DeJean, the number one player available going into the second round per Mel Kiper Jr. Jerzon Newton, defensive tackle out of Illinois, number two. Kool-Aid McKinstry, the corner of Alabama, number three. Mitchell, the wide receiver out of Texas, is four. Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia, is five.
Ooh.
Ennis.
Can I just say this right now?
Sure, yeah.
Honestly,
another wide receiver at 35?
Oh, my goodness. Honestly, right now, Ladd McConkey. Can you say line up in the slot? Can you say Wes Welker? Here we go. Ladd McConkey. Once again, his feet are dynamic. We're talking about a guy you line up in the slot. Go ahead and put your nickel over him. Go ahead and do that. Let's see where this goes. Because he's going to win on a lot of choice routes, a lot of option routes. He's going to win on those routes a vast majority of the time because of his feet. And that's going to help a quarterback get the ball out quickly as well. Ladd McConkey, there's somebody, a little question mark right there. Put him on your radar.
A wide receiver would be a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off.
Well, I love the dodgeball reference here. Burnsy, look, there's quite a few. I mean, you mentioned Mitchell and McConkey. Keon Coleman's still out there. Troy Franklin is still out there. Malachi Corley's out there. Not so much maybe with those last couple guys at 35, but again, you've got three picks in the third round, too, and maybe you could package them to move up later in the second if you needed to. I'll be honest, wide receiver is not even something I would have entertained the thought of, a second one, except they went into free agency kind of thin there,
yep.
Let Hollywood walk, and traded Rondale Moore. So they are in a position where it still would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to walk away with the best wide receiver and the fifth best wide receiver, sixth best wide receiver, you know, it's...
And maybe the best slot receiver.
Yeah, right.
You're going to line them up right there and say, go have at it, bro.
The edge that I'm looking at Kiper's list right now is Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan. He's the ninth best prospect, according to his, you know, best available right now, if the Cardinals were to go there as well. There's also the Ennis Rackstraw, the corner out of Missouri, who's there. So there's going to be plenty of choices for them. And again, you know, the Buffalo Bills have already shown a penchant to want to move down twice already in this draft.
Yeah, they don't want to pick, apparently.
They don't. You know, they just want to collect sixth-round picks, fifth-round picks to keep moving down.
That's a bold strategy.
What an odd, if we're just, you know, kind of looking at general draft reaction, there's probably bigger reactions than the Bills. What an odd offseason for Buffalo to trade one of their top wide receivers to a conference rival in Houston,
mm-hmm.
to trade a draft pick to the Chiefs, mm-hmm. again, one of their conference rivals that you think they're competing for Super Bowls with and AFC titles with, all to just keep kind of slotting down in the dreads. A very odd approach for Buffalo.
They let Gabriel Davis go too, didn't they? I believe you are correct.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah. It's just going to be Josh Allen, I guess, throwing to Josh Allen next year. I mean, there's a lot of good receivers. I'm assuming Buffalo is taking one here at some point. So maybe that helps push a corner down to the Cardinals.
Well, I mean, to your point, let's say Buffalo sticks. They have to take a wide receiver at this point, don't they?
They don't have any. You do need them to play.
There's still a lot of good wide receivers that I think that are out there.
Yeah.
And because of that, hang on to your butts here, because I think it's not over, definitely. But, man.
But if they did that, if they went wide receiver at 33, now there's two spots before the Cardinals pick, and there's two corners.
Yeah.
It's Kool-Aid McKinstry, and it's DeJean from Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're almost rooting for the Bills to take a wide receiver at 33, so if you want one of those corners will be there for the Cardinals at 35.
The Chiefs trade would make a little more sense because maybe they're not looking for a Xavier Worthy type receiver. They're looking for a different one. But what you said about them trading with one of their rivals in the team they're trying to catch and helping Kansas City, that part still remains.
There were, if we look at the first round in general, there were a few trades, obviously, of note. Vikings moving up a spot to get J.J. McCarthy. The Vikings moving up several spots to get Dallas Turner. That was kind of particularly bold. I would assume most of us would agree that the big eye-opening wow move today was the Atlanta Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah.
at number 8 when they had just given Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed to be their quarterback. And I'm reading online that Kirk Cousins was very surprised. was very surprised.
Did he like that or no? Did they call him and did they ask him that?
I don't think he liked it very much from what I read on the old Twitter machine.
He's like the highest paid player in NFL history. He can probably deal with it.
Honestly, David, are you telling me the truth on that?
Yeah,
I'm looking for the tweet. Surprised.
I'm looking for the tweet. I think it came from Diana Rossini.
Can I just say this right now? If you're an Atlanta Falcon fan, give me the torch. Where's the pitchfork and where's the torch? Because I'm marching on them, metaphorically speaking, of course, right now.
Here's the tweet from Diana Rossini from 2 hours ago. The Falcons called Kirk Cousins when they were on the clock to let him know. From what I learned, Cousins understood a quarterback would be considered, but he did not believe his successor would be taken in the first round. I'm told he's a bit stunned.
Oh my goodness, he's got to be right now. That is so bad. I mean, honestly, if you're an Atlanta Falcon fan, stop and think about it. You literally did this. You signed this guy to a 4-year contract, $180 million, with $100 million guaranteed. He's thinking to himself, I'm going to be the quarterback here for at least the next 3 years.
You would think.
Definitely. And now all of a sudden, you draft a guy at number 8. Your replacement right now at number 8 comes in. Man, I don't know what they're thinking down there. What are they doing?
Honestly, I mean, I hear what you're saying from the Kirk Cousins side of things.
Maybe this is why Belichick didn't go there.
They didn't want Belichick, and they now have two quarterbacks. And they used a very high draft pick and a lot of money. To me, the thing is, why would you pay Kirk Cousins if you knew you had the 8th pick already? Just go out and get Justin Fields or Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson costs, like, what, $1 million? Just go get him for a year. And then you can have your guy. It's very disconnected.
Yes, it does. It looks like there was no plan by the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. Or at least three different people had input into the plan for the Atlanta Falcons. Unacceptable.
First defensive player was taken at 15 overall in Laiatu Latu, the edge out of UCLA.
Wow.
This is from Adam Schefter 20 minutes ago. In all, there were a record 23 offensive players selected in the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft.
That?
6 QBs, 7 wide receivers, 9 offensive linemen, and 1 tight end. I believe the record was 19 offensive players in the first round. I think all time, there's been like 3 times in the NFL Draft where 19 offensive players have been taken.
So
not only did
it
set the new record, blew it away. Absolutely blew it away.
Wow.
The first 14 picks being offensive players is just unbelievable.
Yeah. And 6 of them being quarterbacks. What do you think about Bo Nix to the Broncos?
Yeah, you know, that honestly, to me right there, Bo Nix, Sean Payton and Bo Nix, correct?
Yes.
I told you guys, I thought Drew Brees was a good comp for Bo Nix. Now, Bo Nix is a little bit taller than Drew Brees. Drew Brees was 6 feet. I think Bo Nix is just under 6'2". I know they list him at 6'2", but I don't think he truly is a true 6'2". Having said that, a lot of similarities in how they read coverage and how they throw the ball as well, to me at least, just watching him play. I don't know, is that a coincidence that maybe Sean Payton watched this kid on tape and said, you know what, he is worth us taking him at number 12.
Schefter tweeted out, and again, this is a tweet that I bookmarked a couple of hours ago, not knowing when I would use it, but Schefter tweeted out when they took Bo Nix. Denver held a private workout with Bo Nix the day after his pro day. The night before the workout, The Broncos sent Knicks three packets of offensive play installation. And the next morning, as they worked it in the classroom with Knicks, he crushed it, according to a Broncos source. The Broncos then took Knicks from the classroom to the field, watched him throw for an hour, and they were convinced he was the quarterback they wanted.
I'm very, I don't want to say surprised, but interested in how well it worked out for these teams that needed quarterbacks. Denver was so desperate for a quarterback, and they didn't trade up. Minnesota didn't really trade up. They traded up, what, one spot to be able to get J.J. McCarthy? A lot better than it looked maybe a couple weeks ago where they might have to trade up to three or four. It's interesting. Yes, six quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks, but those were five quarterback-desperate teams, and Atlanta, and nobody knows what they're doing. So yeah. The fact that five quarterback-desperate teams got their guys without really having to trade anything, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings, as you mentioned, just a minor move to get up one spot, probably just in case they were worried the Raiders, the Broncos, were going to do something. But Caleb Williams, 1, Jaden Daniels, 2, Drake May, 3, Michael Penix, 8, J.J. McCarthy, 10, Bo Nix, 12. And those are your quarterbacks in this year's draft, with likely more to come, I would think. Spencer Rattler, yeah, probably the next quarterback. I don't know when that's going to happen, but yeah, probably the next quarterback to go, I would think.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, David. But for me, once again, one of the biggest questions, okay, we already talked about him, Michael Penix at number 8 right there with the Atlanta Falcons. Man, you got a lot of splaining to do on that one right there. Isn't that right? I would also say the Minnesota Vikings and what the Vikings did, going from 11 to number 10.
Yeah.
What happened there, man? What happened there? You're not just going to give up draft capital for the heck of just giving up capital so you can move up to number 10.
That's a great point, because if Denver is spinning it like Bo Nix was their guy that they won. Oh, we knew Bo Nix was the guy when we gave him these papers. Well, who else was supposed to trade up ahead of Minnesota?
The Raiders would be the only one I could think of. The Raiders would be at 13.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd have to be. All right, so it looks like, okay, we're good to go. Joining us right now here on our draft coverage on Arizona Sports, the flagship home of the Arizona Cardinals, the man of the hour, the general manager of the Cardinals, Monty Austin Fort, joins us here on Arizona Sports. Monty, welcome to the show. I got Wolf. I got Luke Lipinski. I'm Dave Burns from Burns & Gambo. Congratulations on what appears to be a very successful night. Thanks for your time.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks for making time for me. Yeah, exciting night for us as an organization. Feel like we've added two impact players, one on each side of the ball, and can't wait to get those guys here and get them started.
Monty, congratulations, man.
Wolf, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, buddy.
I miss our Friday calls, man.
I know, man. I'm really, really happy for you, Monty, that Marvin Harrison Jr. was there. What will he do specifically for this team, Monty?
Hey, listen, you know, I think with Marvin, Marvin's got two jobs. It's get open and catch the ball, and I think he can do both those two things. He's a unique guy. He's long. He's fast. He runs routes like a smaller man, and he's got really good ball skills. So, you know, I think in the end, he's going to have a chance to come in here and compete and carve himself out a role and help our offense and really be able to move the chains, catch touchdowns, make explosive plays. And you know, I think we're just really excited to get him here, get him rolling, get him to learn the system and really utilize his skill set.
Monty, I'm assuming you guys got offers on number 4, and trading obviously worked really well for you guys last season. How difficult or challenging was it to just stay put at number 4 and take him?
You know, not difficult at all. You know, I think we came in, I'd say for the better part of the last week, I felt like Marvin was our guy at number 4, and it was going to take something really big to get us off that pick. And so, you know, we certainly had conversations. We did our due diligence. We waited for, or we were ready for any opportunity that came our way. And ultimately, the best thing for us as an organization was to add Marvin at number 4.
So the giant offer on the house never came. You and your wife don't have to move like you were joking.
Yeah, Shannon can rest easy. We're not packing up, so okay. We can lay our head down and sleep well tonight.
Tell Shannon we're glad that she doesn't have to worry about
yeah,
the house.
Yeah, we're all happy. Yep.
I'm curious about the input that you got from the players on your roster. We saw the video from Kyler Murray that he posted rocking that cool old school Anquan Boldin jersey celebrating.
I haven't seen that yet. I'll have to check that out.
He was watching it on TV and he's rocking an old Anquan Boldin Cardinals jersey. He was very happy. Plus, you had Paris Johnson Jr. I know you were asked about it during your presser. What sort of input from one Ohio State Buckeye to another did you get from Paris on Marvin?
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately all our players, especially our young players who, you know, have been in the same locker room, been on the same field as these guys, we utilize all those players as resources. So we talked to all our players, and obviously they have great insight into what kind of people, what kind of teammates these guys are, these draft prospects. And so, you know, Paris was a great resource for us just to ask about Marv and who he was as a person and as a worker and as a teammate. And Paris gave Marvin, not surprisingly, glowing reviews. And so that was a great resource that Paris was for us there. And, you know, there's our other players have also been resources on some players that we might get a chance to add tomorrow.
So, Monty, what do you think is the best attribute of Marvin Harrison Jr.? Because we've heard so many things about what this guy is and what he's all about. But when you as a scout, Monty, not as a general manager, but as a scout, when you scout Marvin Harrison Jr., what do you think his best attribute is?
Well, you know, I don't want to repeat myself, Wolf, but I'm going to anyway. The guy gets open, and the guy's got elite ball skills to catch it. And that's ultimately what a receiver's job is. And, you know, I'd say the unique part of Marvin is just really his size. For Marvin to be able to run routes like he does, you would suspect that he was a smaller receiver. Usually those guys that can run routes and smooth in and out of breaks and be able to drop his weight and get out of his cuts, usually those guys come in smaller packages. And so, you know, Marvin's unique. And, you know, he's shown it the last couple of years at Ohio State, and he's been a highly productive receiver at a top level of competition. And, you know, we feel like he can continue to produce and be effective at you know, helping us become explosive on offense, and we can't wait to get him out there on the field for us.
Monty, I'm assuming you feel pretty good about the offense at this point with what you've been able to do, not that it's ever, you know, a finished product, but I'm just wondering how much getting to see Kyler Murray in this offense for the second half of last season gave you, you know, insight as to what you would need and what you have with him and kind of opened up doors for you in this draft and even beyond this draft.
Yeah, no, I think that was a huge part of what we were able to see. You know, I mean, hey, listen, it was a challenge for Kyler last year to come off a major injury like he did and then to have to adapt to a new offense without having the spring, without having training camp, without having half the season. And so, you know, as he was working back both physically and then mentally, you know, really hit his stride there, especially that last month of the season. So, you know, I think we're really fired up to see him have a full offseason of training and not an offseason of rehab. And, you know, really excited here in the next week or two to be able to get him out on the field with his teammates. And then as we get into OTAs with our new players and the players that have been here, just excited to build upon what we had there the last month of the season. And you know, think there's a lot of good things ahead for our entire organization.
Monty Austin Ford, our guest here on Arizona Sports and our draft coverage. Darius Robinson, in his interview after he got selected by you guys, used the magic word with Molly McGrath. He called himself a violent player, which he's speaking Jonathan Gannon's language, obviously. Tell me about kind of what you've added in him and what sort of presence defensively you think he brings to the table.
Yeah, you know, Darius is a unique player. He's one thing that'll stand out is just his sheer size and length, and really he has experience. So it's a unique guy in that. Really, last year, the 22 season, he played more interior, and then the 23 season, they had him drop some weight, and he played on the edge. So, you know, one thing that stands out with him is really his versatility to play along the defensive line, and really, we feel like he's a guy that can help. help us out on all three downs, that he can be effective as a run player. He brings pass rush ability both from the edge and from inside. And, you know, on top of that, we think he's an A-plus football character type of guy, a guy who's going to put the team first, a guy who works, a guy who shows up every day. So, you know, we feel really good about adding a player that we think can be disruptive on the defensive front, and, you know, a guy that's played at a high level in the SEC.
Monty, do you like a guy at number 35?
We're excited. We'll be ready. You know, we'll have all day to look at the board tomorrow. But we have some intriguing guys that are still on our board. And, you know, really, I think what ends up happening when you have a pick this high going into day two is other teams have all day to sit and look at their board. And you know, I'm guessing that our phone is ringing pretty hot and heavy tomorrow as well. For teams looking to come up. So, you know, we'll be ready. I know that we will be ready to take a strong player there at 35. And if a situation shows itself that that makes sense for us, benefits the team, you know, we won't hesitate to do that either.
Oh, hold on. We'll just got to follow
up. No, I was just going to say, you're pretty happy, aren't you?
Guys, draft night is exciting. It's intense. You know, our whole staff, whether it's scouts or coaches, but, you know, really it's a special night for scouts. And I'm excited that you know, all this work that goes in and really, it's over a year in the making. And for us to go out and add two guys that we feel as strongly about it, as we do about these two guys, it's an exciting night and just, you know, just exciting for our entire football program here. So that was a long answer to say, yeah, I'm excited, guys.
Monty, I don't know. I mean, were you surprised at all that six of the first 12 picks were quarterbacks? And you know, how much did that help you guys? Because you don't need a quarterback, so maybe it pushed some players that you might need down to you.
Yeah, certainly, fellas. Yeah, certainly. That was a unique start to the draft. I mean, I think somebody had told me historic with not just the quarterbacks, but with the number of offensive players. And so, you know, really, it just starts to be a numbers game. You know, we're counting numbers, and there's guys that we feel that we would be excited to pick at 27. And, you know, eventually some of those guys start getting picked. And so, you know, you're counting numbers and, hey, we're eight picks out and there's five guys we like, and, you know, hey, we're four picks out and there's three guys we like. And, you know, so yeah, it really just becomes a numbers game. And, you know, in the end, you're holding your breath a little bit that one of them makes it. And, you know, we're just fired up that one of them made it to us at 27.
Bonnie, congratulations again to you, Bonnie, and the organization on the night. Thanks for the fun ride. We enjoyed every minute of it watching it from afar. Good luck tomorrow and on Saturday as well, okay?
Hey, absolutely, guys. Buckle up. Hey, we're still going to get some more players tomorrow, so hang with us. We're fired up. We're excited, guys, so appreciate all your time.
Right. Thanks, on, Monty.
Monty Austin Ford, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, kind enough to join us in the moments after the conclusion of the first round of the draft. And that concludes our coverage of the NFL draft. It started 4.5 hours ago. Yeah, 5 o'clock. 5.5 hours ago, if you consider we started our draft show at 4. So
Wolf started like 19 hours ago when he woke up ready for the draft. So
I think Wolf was ready for the draft somewhere around March 1st.
Yeah, probably.
Think?
Maybe even right a little earlier. Yeah.
Scouting combine, maybe. You were ready to go, I would imagine.
Yeah, pretty much, David.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's ready for tomorrow.
Ready for tomorrow, too.
Where's the coffee?
All right. So let's say the game plan for tomorrow, obviously Bickley and Marotta starting at 6 o'clock with all your drafts coverage, recapping the first round, looking ahead to the second round. You guys will be on at 10. Gambo and I will be on at straight up 2 o'clock, live from the FanDuel Sportsbook at Footprint Center for tomorrow's game 3.
Oh, yeah,
of the Suns
too.
And the Minnesota Timberwolves. So we've got that going on tomorrow night as well. So stay with us tomorrow on behalf of everybody. I want to thank all of our technical crew behind the scenes, everybody who got the video working and the audio. Erin Maloney, obviously, just working her butt off out here with us. Our crew back there in the studio, Mitch and Lauren and Jarrett Carlin and anybody else I might have forgotten, I apologize. Thank you to everybody who made this show go. We appreciate it. On behalf of everybody here at Arizona Sports, have a good night. Thanks for listening to our draft coverage here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.